Hello. I'm calling this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. Will members please take their seats? We don't have quite a quorum yet, so we're going to wait on doing our minutes until we get a few more folks in. Otherwise, today we're going to hear from quite a few groups of great folks that are going to talk to us today about the opportunity gap and how they're tackling it in their districts and seeing success. We have about 10 minutes for each of them. They get 20 minutes, 10 minutes for a presentation, 10 minutes for folks to ask questions, because I want this to help maybe start percolating some ideas for bills that you might have. We are first going to go to Intermediate District 287. They want to start filtering down. We have Sandy Lewandowski, the superintendent, Courtney Caldwell, the equity leader, and Kate Hulsey, the assistant director of crisis response. And then after this presentation, I might take a few minutes back out and do our minutes. So why don't you go ahead and each introduce yourselves for the record with your titles, and also so I can hear how your names are pronounced, because I'm sorry, I probably mispronounced them. And then begin with your presentation. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sandy Lewandowski, superintendent of Intermediate District 287.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kate Hulse, and I am the Assistant Director of Mental Health and Crisis Intervention for Intermediate District 287.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Courtney Caldwell, Equity Leader in District 287.
Thank you. Go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair, as an intermediate district, my school serves nearly 1,000 of the highest need students in Hennepin County. Our programs include Federal Setting 4 Special Education, which means they need a full day of segregated school site programming. In addition, we have alternative learning centers and care and treatment programs, which include both mental health treatment and correction programs, among many others. Our member school districts include Brooklyn Center, Eden Prairie, Edina, Hopkins, Orono, Osseo, Richfield, Robbinsdale, St. Louis Park, Wayzata, and West Tonka. Students in our district are disproportionately students of color. We are indeed the disproportionality district. In my district, Black and Latino students are three times more likely to be labeled as emotionally and behaviorally disordered and SLD than their peers. The homeless and highly mobile population in my district has doubled over the past year. And perhaps the most striking of our data show that if you're Black, you are six times more likely to be directed toward the correction system rather than a mental health treatment program. We are living in the middle of the pipeline to prison, and we see the trajectory of some students in real time, starting with the very youngest children that we serve. Our efforts to interrupt this pipeline are seen in our current innovative mental health grant that the legislature funded for 2 years. In that program for K-2 students, in special education, we are providing an intensive therapeutic teaching model in partnership with the Amherst Wilder Foundation. All of the students in this program are young boys of color. If this program was not provided in our school, these little boys would not have access to mental health treatment. There are simply too many barriers for them and their families. It's our hope that this intensive therapeutic program, we will change the trajectory of these little kids and their families and create a model for blended therapeutic approaches for our older students. It is important to be clear that if a K-2 student was having an extraordinary medical condition like a major heart condition, they would be in the ICU of Children's Hospital. We should provide the equivalent for K-2 children who are having extraordinary traumatic experiences that are impacting their mental health and behavior. We have a critical public health crisis that is neither understood nor addressed, and it is disproportionately impacting students of color. Addressing disproportionality in special education is central to interrupting racial disparities. We realize that we are often the last stop on the pipeline to prison, and we have realized that we need to sharply limit suspensions by putting a tighter decision-making process in place, and we have done just that. Finally, we have moved from a school resource model officer model to a school safety coach model because we wanted to avoid the impact of criminalizing mental health. In my school district, we have declared student outcomes and racial equity as the two mission outcomes as a priority. And in recent years, we have taken some aggressive and sometimes controversial actions to address the racial gaps. My colleagues, Courtney and Kate, will tell you more about that right now.
Good afternoon. As I mentioned, I'm Kate Hulse, and I'm the Assistant Director of Mental Health and Crisis Intervention at District 287. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about our school safety coaches. In the year 2017, we made a controversial move. We removed school resource officers from our schools, and we created a new safety model, the school safety coaches, with two key goals in mind. We wanted them to build relationships with students and address behavior before it escalated to the point of needing police intervention. Instead of criminalizing students for their behavior, which is more often than not the result of their disability, we are working with them and getting them the help that they need. These school safety coaches are trained in mental health and trauma, and they are experts in crisis intervention, de-escalation techniques, and restorative justice practices. Our safety coaches know our students. They're tuned in, and they can tell when the temperature in the school is rising. They're standing outside every morning greeting students, engaging if they're escalated. Additionally, our safety coaches better reflect our students racially. Since the model's inception 2 years ago, incidents requiring police involvement have decreased by half. Critical incidents have shifted from dangerous emergencies in need of urgent police involvement to situations that can typically be addressed through de-escalation and/or the use of a mental health approach. Across the district, arrests and citations have also decreased by more than two-thirds. We have recorded a total of only 6 arrests and citations across our entire district this school year. We know this approach isn't for every school district, but in a district like ours, where a sizable majority of students are served in special education and have mental health issues, we know that this is best for our kids. As far as suspensions go, the vast majority of students who walk through our doors have been excluded from school in some way. Many have been suspended, often multiple times, and some have been expelled, oftentimes for dangerous behaviors. Each school year we respond to hundreds of critical incidents in our district, acute mental health crises, suicide attempts, and violent assaults on staff. These are not uncommon. Last year, we reported 319 staff injuries, 28 of which were serious head injuries, such as concussions. Despite all of this, we consider suspending students only as a very last resort. It's usually only reserved for cases where there is a significant safety risk to staff or other students. Our superintendent is the sole decision maker on any suspensions in the district. And to date this school year, only 9 students have been suspended. Finally and quickly, I'd like to speak about our therapeutic teaching model, TTM. TTM classrooms are currently comprised of 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old boys of color. All of the students currently in this program identify as black or biracial. A profile of a child in this program might look like a 5-year-old boy with a long history of involvement with Child Protective Services due to his mother's struggles with addiction and depression and due to his history of witnessing domestic violence in the home. In his short life, the student has spent time living out of the family car for months at a time with his mother, brother, and sisters. And recently, he may have spent 3 or 4 weeks in an agency-run shelter before finally being placed in foster care with a family friend. At school, he appears anxious and hypervigilant, constantly scanning his surroundings for danger. He's easily upset and can become aggressive and violent when he's scared, sad, or hurt. He and his family want him to make friends. They want him to learn, and they want him to enjoy school. And he needs the support of dedicated special educators working hand-in-hand with embedded classroom-based therapists to make progress towards that goal. We are outcomes-oriented and data-informed in this work, and as we continue with the TTM program, we are evaluating our implementation practices and already making changes to the program as a result. Additionally, we are continuously collecting data on key performance indicators to perpetually improve our equity work.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Courtney Caldwell, equity leader in 287. We're at another crossroads in this country where there's a fierce need for change. For too long, we have minimized the significance of race in a child's educational experience. You heard my superintendent and colleagues speak to the reality of how race has lived in our district. And we all know it is not just 287 who witnesses and unintentionally perpetuates some of these inequities. It is not because we don't have brilliant, passionate, caring people. Rather, it is the system in which we operate. The seemingly impenetrable barriers and unequal opportunities and access that people of color in this state face. We function in an educational system that was not designed for children of color. And in 287, we not only see this, but we are also making it our moral imperative and responsibility to do something about it. We watch day in and day out how students of color are disproportionately placed in the criminal justice system rather than being provided the treatment services they needed. For example, students of color make up 90% of our district's correctional population. 90% of the students in our corrections programs are students of color, while white students make up almost 70% of the mental health treatment programs that we have. We work to decriminalize students of color, again by changing to the school safety coaches model. We route students to get help instead of arresting them or sending them to the juvenile detention center. We are changing this trajectory. We recognize that to sustain this work, we need everyone on board. All of our sites, including our district service center employees, have equity teams that isolate race and build the capacity of our staff to engage, sustain, and deepen the work around racial equity. This work is also taking place at the cabinet level, within the school board, and with all instructional and operational leaders. We use a common language and protocol, seek multiple racial perspectives as we implement our strategic work, employ the use of mindful inquiry to bridge racial and cultural barriers, and ground ourselves in critical race theory. We understand that as a district, this work is a journey and a process. We approach it with humility, transparency, and fierce urgency.
I'd like to close by reminding you that the rate of childhood trauma among Minnesota's black children is almost twice that of white children, 58% versus 31%. Schools have become the front line of the children's mental health system. In many schools who are ill-equipped to handle this crisis, their only option is to respond to students' trauma-related behavior with police intervention or a disability diagnosis. On February 8th, my district will host a policymakers summit to talk about the intersection of childhood trauma and race. Your presence and voice in this conversation are crucial, and we've included a flyer in our handouts. We're happy to take any questions you might have at this time.
Members, anybody have any questions or comments? Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presentation. First is an easy question. Where is District 287? Where are you?
Madam Chair, Representative Christensen, we ring the West Metro area, so basically Osseo on the north and the suburban area around Richfield on the south.
Okay. And another question. I'm sorry. Thank you. Do you have teacher retention problems? That's the first part of this question. And do you have teachers of color also? And how do you see that in your system? How that, you know, what are you looking for in teachers?
Superintendent Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Christensen, I believe we have a challenge in recruiting fully licensed teachers. And my own impression is that when we get the right fit, they're terribly passionate and they center themselves on this kind of work for their full career and stay with us. We're very pleased that part of the recent legislative professional development grant allowed us to sponsor our own Grow Your Own. And because we have about an equal number of licensed staff versus educational assistants, we find that our educational assistants are often some of our best candidates. And those educational assistants are very disproportionately high in individuals of color. So while we don't have a lot of teachers of color right now, we are growing our own and see that that is a really fine way to expand our licensed staff with individuals of color.
Okay, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Representative Hu.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation today. It was really eye-opening and then validating for those of us who have been advocating for some of the same things you've been talking about. I did have a really quick question, and I missed a couple of minutes at the beginning here, so you may have already gone over this, but did you go through what the demographic of students in your district is?
Superintendent Lewandowski?
Madam Chair, Representative, sorry, I can't see it. We do have the racial demographics in your packet, and you can see that we are disproportionately students of color, and the numbers are represented on the chart. The three charts that are included there do show that pretty clearly. We see the kind of disparities, particularly with students who are black. You do have those?
Superintendent, was it a different? We have the handout on racial equity by numbers, the therapeutic teaching model, the school safety coaches model, and then the 45% of children have experienced serious trauma. But I don't know if we have one with your demographics on it. But if you have something handy, we could have it copied.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I don't have extra copies of that right in front of me, but what I can tell you is that we are about 69% black, about 13.6% Hispanic, and about 12% white, and that is in our labeling of kids in across the district, I believe, as I'm looking at this. But we are highly disproportionately kids of color.
Thank you, Superintendent. Follow-up, Representative Hur?
Can you just, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just repeat again what school district? I'm surprised that there aren't any Asian students in your district.
Yes, we do have some Asian district students, about a little over between 1% and 2%.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Hosan.
Madam Chair and Representative, sorry I was late. I was at the Capitol, the hearing for murdered and missing women in the indigenous community. And I missed the first part of this presentation, so if I ask a question that you already addressed, I apologize. Is this a public school or is it a charter school? And can you repeat where the location is, like which district? I mean, I know the number, it says 287, but I have no idea what that means.
Superintendent, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, intermediate school districts are public schools. There are four of them in Minnesota. Ours is geographically located on the west side of the metropolitan area, and so it is 11 school districts. Basically bordered from Osseo on the north around that western ring to Richfield on the south.
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, and is this by choice? How do students get referred to your school district?
Superintendent.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are a variety of ways for our students in our Setting 4 special education program. It is all referral by the special ed director within our member districts. Our care and treatment programs, which are either mental health facilities or correction programs, again, that might be located within one of our member districts, and we provide the educational services. Those are students arrive at those through various doors, the juvenile justice system, for example, or it's a medical kind of admittance to one of those programs. And another one would be our Area Learning Center programs. We have four. These programs are ALCs, which tend to be the highest need kids within the ALC population. And those, by Minnesota statute, you can self-enroll if you meet one of the established criteria that is listed in statute. So there's a variety of ways you can enter one of the programs that I'm primarily referencing here today.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. One more follow-up, then I have Representative Erickson on the list.
I'm done. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presence here today. Very insightful presentation. I've been following you for a long time, and I just have the greatest respect for the strides that you've been making over the years with your student body. So congratulations, and thank you for sharing this data with us, and thanks for creating a Grow Your Own program, because that's one of the best ways for you to build your school population of teachers of diversity and also experts in your area. I have a question about your report card. I was looking at your report card from the Department of Education. So my question is, how consistent is your attendance? It looks very low, but I'm sure that has an impact on everything you do in regard to how long do your students stay with you and how regularly do they attend. Could you give me some enlightenment on what is happening there?
Superintendent?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for your kind words. I appreciate it. We do have attendance issues. I'm going to let Ms. Hulse address this as well. But primarily our Area Learning Center programs and our Setting 4 Special Education program, the kids that enroll there are living primarily with extraordinary challenges. You heard our homeless rate. That might be one example of kids are living in homelessness, and many of our students are. You're going to see kids with poor attendance. If you have kids who are in and out of juvenile corrections, for example, which many of our kids tend to be, you're going to have trouble with attendance. That said, we often think of ourselves as being the primary stability within kids' lives, and we see kids show us evidence of that all the time. So all the more important that we are a comprehensive anchor for them, whether it's in education, and I would maintain in mental health services as well.
Ms. Hulse, do you have something to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I'd like to add also that in addition to the challenges that my superintendent laid out, we also have students with extremely tough mental illness for them to deal with. So we have students who are experiencing school avoidance, who are experiencing acute mental health crisis, who may be kept home for days at a time by a parent or by choice, or who may visit an emergency room and be admitted for a short period of time. So we do have a lot of students that are in and out due to their mental health on a pretty regular basis, on top of the other pieces that make life difficult.
And Madam Chair and Superintendent and staff, that's going to have an impact on, you know, how your report card looks too, because you don't have a consistent attendance by your students or your clients, I suppose you could call them in some instances. But I am delighted to see that you responded to the survey for student engagement, and that the chart shows that many students strongly agree that the teachers care about the students. And that's so good to see. Not all schools report this information, and so I'm delighted to see it. And your graduation rate has increased a little bit, but, you know, very, very steady. So you have many things to be very proud of. So thank you for your participation today. And maybe I have one other question. Are you able to count students working or in school at home as being in attendance? You know, if your program requires that they be at work or doing something at home, do you count those towards your attendance?
Superintendent?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, certainly when those activities are part of a work experience that is part of the student's individual education plan, indeed, those are all counted. In fact, that's one of the strongest components of our program, is getting those kids out in communities involved in building those work skills.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. And I think we have one more question, Representative Mariani, and then we'll move on to the next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Lewandowski, so good to see you. Thank you for your leadership over the years. I won't ask a question just because of the time. I just want to make a very quick acknowledgement of the move that the district has done in regards to school resource officers and the use of SROs. And I want to be careful here because I don't want to malign SROs What I want to do is really uplift, you know, alternatives here. And it seems to me that you've taken the very courageous step as a community to do that. I suspect that part of what that involves is a different methodological approach in regards to the professionals that you're placing there. And I hope, Madam Chair, that sometime, you know, throughout our session, we'll have an opportunity to talk about a little bit more about SROs. But at this point, I just simply want to lift up and acknowledge your move in this direction. I look forward to hearing more about your successes with this.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I think we might have to do a joint hearing one of these days. Yes. Superintendent, you had one more follow-up, and then we're going to move on.
Madam Chairman, Representative Mariani, I would just say that it was a process in concert with local police departments. As an intermediate district, we actually were working with about three or four different police departments, and we found those conversations to be very collaborative. And over time, I think it's important to emphasize that we still call 911. On a regular basis, and we have police departments responding when we feel the need. But we also see this model as being extraordinarily helpful for our students. So it's a both and.
Thank you. And I think why our next group is coming down, which is the Prairie Island Indian Community, we're going to turn to the minutes now that we have a quorum. Thank you so much I want to put a plug in for your February 8th event, and maybe you can send us the invite so we can send it out to the committee once again. So thank you. It's also in your packet, I believe. So we have the minutes in front of us, and we have to approve the minutes from our joint hearing on Tuesday, January 22nd between Ed Policy and Ed Finance. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from Tuesday, January 22nd?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. I have a motion to approve the minutes for January 22nd. Anybody opposed? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for the Tuesday, January 22nd meeting is approved. And now we have in front of us the minutes for the January 23rd meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes from the Wednesday, January 23rd meeting?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. We have Representative Moeller moves to approve the minutes for the Wednesday, January 23rd meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes for Wednesday, January 23rd are approved, and I promise I'll get that down one of these days. And now before us, we actually have Paul Dressen, the Prairie Island Indian Community Education Director, and Mr. Dressen is going to fill us in on how they're tackling the opportunity gap. Mr. Dressen, could you please state your name and title for the record?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Ampe Tuash Day. Paul Dressen, Amakiapi Do, Tintuinta Edwa T. My name is Paul Dressen, and I have the great privilege today to represent the Prairie Island Indian community before this committee. I am here to share our community's story. It is a story about values and perseverance. Most importantly, it is a story about accomplishments and success. The Prairie Island Indian community and its members. When most people hear the words success and Indian in the same sentence, they immediately think about casinos and the financial independence that many tribal nations and Native Americans have earned through the growth of tribal government gaming. But this success story, as I like to say, BC, before casino, I began working in the education department for the Prairie Island Indian community in 1989. About a year before the opening of Treasure Island Resort and Casino. I started as a post-secondary counselor after graduating from the Red Wing High School and colleges in Minnesota and Alaska. Today, I lead the education department and represent Prairie Island on the Minnesota Tribal Education Committee and the Minnesota Indian Education Association. I have been a part of Indian education at every level, from my own days as a student in the Minnesota public schools to now, helping equip today's teachers with the tools they need to reach Native American students effectively with the appropriate cultural insights. For example, we connect teachers with resources that are culturally relevant, including our Dakota language teacher, tribal elders, our singing and dance troupe, and our government leaders. On more than one occasion, we've had our tribal council president, Shelley Buck, come into classroom to speak to the classes about tribal government. That makes learning real. I have seen a lot over more than 30 years in education. High dropout rates, cultural insensitivity, indifference. But I've also seen hope, innovation, strong values, and for the Prairie Island Indian community, high school graduation rates that are amongst the highest not only in Minnesota, but across the country. We are consistently asked how we achieve graduation rates exceeding 90%, nearly twice that rate of all Native American students in Minnesota. Educators and policymakers want to know what is the secret to our success. In some ways, the answer is easy. It boils down to strong values and relationships. But the reality is that our success in education has required principled leadership and a disciplined approach to building and maintaining bridges. Indian culture teaches us that our decisions as leaders must be viewed through the lens of seven generations. That eye to the future is evident in the premium that Prairie Island community leaders continue to place on the value of education. Long before I joined the education department, more than 30 years ago, the elected leaders of the Prairie Island Indian community understood that the tribe's future depended on a healthy, engaged, and educated tribe. The high priority and value placed on education is a tradition that has been passed down by elders and tribal councils for many years. Today, education is a family value for tribal members, not just as a community priority. As a result, when the youth of Prairie Island look at their parents and community elders, they see graduates. They recognize that education forms the foundation for successful relationships, successful families, and a successful community. We want every member of the Prairie Island Indian community to succeed in education. That is why our elected leaders pass a tribal ordinance requiring that a tribal member must have a high school diploma or GED before he or she can benefit from the disbursement payments from the Prairie Island tribal businesses. The principled leadership by Prairie Island elected leaders is an investment in the tribe's future and its future leaders, and underscores the high value and priority Prairie Island continues to tie to education. The second secret to our education success is building and maintaining bridges between the Prairie Island community and educators, and between educators and students and their parents. While some tribal nations have their own schools for tribal members, Prairie Island students attend the Red Wing Public School. Today, there are between 150 and 200 Native American students in the Red Wing School District, and not all of those students are from Prairie Island. It is hard to argue with the numbers and facts. For nearly 200 years, the nation's public school system has failed Native American students. The national high school graduation rate for Native Americans hover around 40%. The number is only slightly better in Minnesota, with graduation rates around 50% for Native students, compared to more than 80% for all students statewide. Our goal for the Prairie Island Indian community is to have 100% of our students earn a high school diploma or GED. We have had a few years with 100% graduation rate. But we want that to be an annual accomplishment. We have worked hard to reverse the educational trauma felt by most Native American students who have historically not had a voice. They have been the invisible students trying to overcome a system that tried to silence and eliminate their culture. We have lifted the cloak of invisibility. We recognize that it was not enough just to sit back and hope that the system will not continue to fail our students, and that somehow, some way, teachers will be able to break through. Hope is not an effective strategy when you're talking about the future of our kids, our community, or our nation. We saw the need for a disciplined, consistent approach to changing the educational system, an approach based on relationships, visibility, and cultural relevancy. The success of our Prairie Island students is a direct result of those efforts and changed approach. Today, tribal flags are proudly displayed in our schools. The Native American Student Association, or NASA, student group is a recognized organization. Tribal members help create and are teaching cultural-based curriculum that is directed towards education standards and benchmarks. And our Prairie Island Education Department is recognized as a valuable, credible resource in bringing a voice to the contributions of Minnesota's tribal nations. So what have we done different? As I mentioned earlier, it is all about building bridges. Through relationships that we have built and nurtured with key education influencers, we are making sure teachers and school district staff are prepared to help Native students succeed. For example, we offer an annual full-day training to all new teachers and staff from Red Wing. Our goal is to introduce them to the Prairie Island Indian community and to provide these educators with the knowledge and the tools they need to connect and build relationships with our students and open the doors for learning. This training breaks down common misunderstandings and preconceived notions about tribal communities and educates new teachers on best practices we have learned from decades of working together. For example, we help teachers create education plans that are relevant and tied to the tribal nations that exist in the state. Having Minnesota students learn about the Dakota people who have lived here for generations makes a lot more sense than having them create totem poles out of toilet paper rolls, especially since those wood carvings have no cultural relevance to our state. We are not just reaching our local district, we are also helping shape the programming and outreach from the Minnesota Department of Education. Through our participation in the Minnesota Tribal Nations Education Committee and the Minnesota Indian Education Association, through those efforts, we are able to work with school districts across the state and offer appropriate cultural insights and tools to improve their effectiveness with Native students. That is helping to lift the bar for tribal nations across Minnesota. We are also building bridges between our community and local students to help them better understand the history of tribal nations in Minnesota. Through firsthand experiences, we are bringing true cultural history into our schools. For example, all second graders in Red Wing School District spend a day at Prairie Island, where they have the opportunity to tour our Elders Garden, experience the Bison Project, and interact with our tribal leaders. The field trip helps to make learning more relevant and real and improves the students' understanding of who we are as a tribal nation and break down barriers at a young age. We have also hosted field trips and career days for more than 1,500 high school and college students from across Minnesota as a way to reconnect these young people with a local tribal community.
Mr. Dressner, are you almost finished?
Thank you. I am.
I want to give some time for questions, too.
Okay. All of our community efforts, whether with students, educators, or policymakers, are about closing the gaps that get in the way of teaching and learning and succeeding. The same is true for our outreach within our own community to Prairie Island students and their families. The current focus of our education department is closing the achievement gap and making sure our tribe's children are ready to learn. By closely monitoring results of state assessment tests, we can identify and address deficiencies early, increasing the likelihood that our students will improve. However, we all know that successfully closing the achievement gap will take more than monitoring test results and remedial action. Despite our high graduation rates, the cold, hard reality is that we struggle with the same broader society challenges that widen the gap for many students, especially Native American students. We are not immune to the mental health struggles and drug addictions that plague many students in Minnesota. Successfully overcoming these real challenges take time and hard work from a team that is united around a goal of helping students succeed. We are fortunate on Prairie Island in that we take a team approach to helping our families. We recognize that the success requires trust. Trust that comes from relationships formed through reliable and consistent contact with family and the student. As I reflect on Prairie Island's education success, I am most proud of our liaison program that provides the consistent, reliable contact from the time a student enters kindergarten until he or she graduates from high school. We employ a team of education liaisons. Their contact with the student and his or her family begin with the student when they enter the education system. It continues as those students move through elementary, into middle school, and all the way until they graduate from high school. Their responsibility is to be available to students and their families daily to monitor the after-school tutoring program. This daily contact with every student and their family helps to identify issues and concerns before they become problems. 30 years ago, kids dropping out of high school was common. In the 80s, our tribal graduation rates were close to 20%. There were some years when we had no students graduate. We risk a generation of forgotten kids into an uncertain future for the community. That is no longer the case, and our liaisons, who are educators themselves, are a big reason why. In addition to the liaison program, the education department offers after-school tutoring, a summer school jumpstart program, which provides an intense focus on reading and math skills. 2 weeks before the school starts, these programs, which are run by licensed teachers, have multiple benefits that positively impact learning, including developing new relationships between educators and our students and creating advocates among the educators who return to their public school position with a deeper understanding of Prairie Island and the needs of Native students. The power of that connection and that advocacy really comes to life at our annual graduation ceremony for our students. It is not just our tribal community coming together to congratulate these students on their achievements. When I look out into the audience, I see district teachers, administrators, school board members, and other education influencers. That tells me that what we are doing at Prairie Island is working and making a difference. We are extremely proud of our education accomplishments on Prairie Island. Some may say our education success is a result of tying a financial incentive to graduation. That certainly plays a role in keeping kids in school. However, to suggest that it is the only reason for a high school graduation rates ignores everything else our community has done to build bridges between the education system and the Native American students, not just on Prairie Island or in Red Wing, but across Minnesota. There is one final point of pride that I would like to share with the committee. We have talked a great deal about high school graduation rates in the 90% range, but the commitment to a strong education from our students or our community does not end with those students walking across the stage and receiving a diploma. Our high school graduates, between 40 and 50% move on to a post-secondary education. That is more than three times the national average for Indian students who attend college. Across Indian country, lack of funding and access to a college keep many Indian children from furthering their education. We never want funding to be a barrier for our children who want to continue learning. That is why our community has a unique college loan program that covers full tuition for students. As long as a student passes all of his or her classes in a given semester, the tuition loan is forgiven. The student is still responsible for any room and board, but their post-secondary education is paid for. That is a wise investment in our community's future leaders. I started my testimony by saying I wanted to share a story about values and perseverance and success. That is the Prairie Island Indian community story, and I'm honored to share it with you. I apologize it took so long, but well, that's 31 years of experience I was trying to do in 15 minutes. Padamia.
Thank you, Mr. Dressen. I think we have a question from Representative Kunesh Padin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that really wonderful report and the success that you're finding down in Prairie Island. I'd like to ask you about the training that you provide to the Red Wing Public Schools. You said before school starts, it's a training or informational session for the teachers. And so my question would be, do you do that annually? And then what is the participation percent that teachers attend that training?
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chairman and Representative, we have probably been doing it for at least 10 years now. It is not just for teachers, it's for all staff. They are almost 100% of all new hires in the school district are asked to come out with superintendents, school board members. They spend the whole day out in the community. We start with some real basic Indian Ed 100, I guess you could say, where we just talk about some of the absentee narrative of our Dakota Oyate, our Dakota people, past, present, and future. That's not in the curriculum, which, of course, as we know, there are benchmarks and standards that it's supposed to be taught to. So we try to give those new teachers some insight. And also we talk about, you know, if you're a kindergarten teacher and you've got little Johnny or Sally or whoever's in that class, coming in and starting to build that relationship, because a public school setting has not always been very positive for our people. So when they're sitting there, they can say, hey, I had an Indian taco out at Junior Elders Center. We got to go out to the Bison Project. We went out and we saw the buffalo. I got to meet some of your grandpas and grandmas or aunts or uncles. It's just a really good way to incorporate starting to build those bridges that are so important for our children in school.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Dressen, thank you for your optimistic and positive presentation. I'm particularly interested in the liaison program, the contact between the leaders of the program and young families, and wonder if that's an initiative supported by the Red Wing School District, or if it's particularly, or if it comes from the Prairie Island community.
Mr. Sandell.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Representative, the liaison program has been in place probably starting back in the 80s. It was grant funded for a part-time person to begin with as a post-secondary education person within the school district through a grant, but then as our community started to have economic success, it was one of the first things that they put in place was to start the education department, and then we've added those liaisons in the school district. Those positions have and always have always been paid through the tribal entity. So,
thank you, Mr. Justin. All right, did you have a follow-up, Representative?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and then we're going to move on to the other testifiers. Go ahead.
I'll talk with Mr. Risson later. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Representative Sandell. Anybody else real quick? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Drosten. Very good presentation. Are you an employee of the Red Wing School District, or are you a double employee of the Indian community and the school district?
Mr. Drosten.
Madam Chairman, Representative Erickson, I have always been employed by the Prairie Island community. The first couple years was through a grant through the school district, but once the economic wealth started in our community, they hired me immediately. So I have been a part of the community since about 1994. So,
Representative, quick follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're not the American Indian Education Coordinator for Red Wing Schools?
I am not. I'm the education. Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I'm the education director for the Prairie Island Dakota.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Dresden. I'm going to bring down next the St. Louis Park Public Schools, and they're going to Austin Osai, the superintendent, is going to chat about the ways they've been tackling the achievement gap and seeing success. Mr. Osai, can you state your name for the record and your title, and then proceed with your presentation?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I first want to start off by just thanking you all for the work that you're doing. I appreciate everything you're doing on behalf of all of the students in the state of Minnesota and your willingness to intervene in current reality in order to change it. For the purpose of my presentation this afternoon, I've provided you with some slides. I won't necessarily be speaking directly to those, but just sharing a little bit about St. Louis Park and how we're currently using QCOMP or ATPPS dollars to deepen teacher racial consciousness.
Mr. Osai, can you state your name for the record and title, too?
Sorry about that. That's okay. Yep. Aston Osai, Superintendent of St. Louis Park Public Schools.
Thank you.
St. Louis Park Public Schools serves approximately 4,600 students. The district includes four elementary schools, grades K-5, one middle school, grades 6-8, and one high school, 9-12. The district educates all children 0-5 and their families through early learning programs and services provided by community education. I'm proud of our award-winning senior program. I often joke that in St. Louis Park, we serve students from birth to death. And, you know, we don't do that alone in St. Louis Park. We work collaboratively with the city as our city boundaries and school district boundaries are contiguous. We're a first-tier suburb of Minneapolis, and St. Louis Park has approximately 48,000 residents, and we're excited about the fact that both our school district and city are growing. Over the past 10 years, St. Louis Park's school population has grown from approximately 4,200 students to nearly 4,600 students, with similar growth projected in the future. In St. Louis Park, students have the opportunity to learn with classmates from all racial, ethnic, religious, and socioeconomic backgrounds. Just a little bit about our ethnicity background. Approximately 57% of our students are white, 24% of our students are black, 11% of our students are Latinx, 5% of our students are Asian, and approximately 2% of our students are American Indian. About 11% of our students are receiving English language services, and 36% of our students are receiving free and reduced lunch. From a teaching and learning standpoint, as a district, we focus on racial equity in all we do. We engage in dialogue that isolates race and makes intentional connections to what is personal, local, and immediate for us, for our learners, in our classrooms and programs every day. Most importantly, we use what we know about ourselves to inform work with learners. We want all of our students to have personal and academic identity that prepares them for future and in all aspects of their life. We do this by offering multiple pathways to college and career readiness. Our International Baccalaureate, immersion, advanced placement, academic class, academy classes offer a large variety of learning experiences grounded in rigor and relevance. In support of our district mission, we continually evaluate student outcomes and align instruction, curriculum, and assessment in a culturally relevant manner. We strive to create learning environments that are nurturing, safe, and inviting of each student each and every day. From a personal standpoint, I moved to St. Louis Park 7 years ago, and I did that at the time when my wife was pregnant with our oldest son, who's currently a kindergartner in St. Louis Park Public Schools. And as a father of now two black males, at the time, we were desirous of finding a school district in which we could live and send our kids where our children would be identified for who they were and would have a chance. As we know, in the state of Minnesota, there are some very predictable and persistent gaps, particularly related to the overall success of black males. So, you know, fast forward now 8 years, and I'm thankful to now work where I live and be the superintendent of this amazing organization that is focused on changing outcomes for all students. And the mission and core values of that organization truly drew me there because they aligned with my overall belief of the importance of public education for the overall success of our democratic society. I just believe that if we don't have strong public education systems, this country will not be successful. And the work that we're doing in St. Louis Park is truly getting at interrupting systems of inequity to ensure that all students have a chance at being positive contributing members to this society. You know, as you all have probably heard, you know, for many, many years, closing the racial opportunity gap is persistent nationwide. And for more than 15 years, we've been focusing on systemic racial equity transformation, just simply because it aligns with our mission and core values, but most importantly, because it's the right thing to do in this country. Several years ago, St. Louis Park Public Schools teachers actively voted to use some of their alternative professional pay system, so ATPPS dollars, to receive coaching and development in the area of racial equity. So I would just like to pause and thank the Park Association of Teachers for their courageous action and willingness and recognition of the fact that there aren't any quick fix solutions to the challenges that we're facing, and that in order to interrupt the systems of inequity that we're facing, that it starts with us as educators, and that it requires a lot of adaptive and hard work undoing the things that we've learned over our time in life in this country. And the purpose, and the Park Association of Teachers has publicly taken the position that the purpose of ATPPS is to build educators' will, skill, and capacity to disrupt systemic racism in order to impact student achievement and experiences at St. Louis Park Public Schools. You know, we believe systemic racial equity change transpires when educators are given the space and support to critically reflect on their own racial consciousness and practice. Our equity instructional coaching model provides sustained dialogue in a trusting environment, and it also really gives educators the space to reflect on their own racial consciousness and then, therefore, interrupting the presence of racism in their classrooms. We have a core value in St. Louis Park that states everyone has equal intrinsic worth. And I just want to share a little bit of data with you. And as I share this data, I do so from the standpoint recognizing that there is nothing in education happens in isolation, right? So what I recognize is that as I share this data, it is a collective set of practices consistently implemented over time that has allowed us to get to this point. And yet, we still have a far and very long way to go. But to start off, you know, I'm proud to state that even with our growing and increasing diversity, racial diversity, socioeconomic diversity, that we've been able to maintain ACT scores in every area that outpace or are on average with the state and national averages. Our graduation rate, overall graduation rate, is over 90%. Our black students graduated in 2017 at the rate of 93%. Our Latinx students graduated at 85%, which outpaces the state. And then our students on free and reduced lunch graduated at 85%. And I say that recognizing that we still have work to do, as all of our students are not graduating. Some other data that I would like to share, which is what I look at, is, you know, so there's some leading indicators and there's some lagging, indicators as it relates to student data. Some of the leading indicators that we're really looking at is, well, what are the students' experiences in St. Louis Park looking like? Particularly, we do a student engagement survey every year, and we specifically connect our student engagement survey to the core values of our organization. So around the core value that everyone has equal intrinsic worth, we differentiate the questions based on grade level. So I'll just give you some examples of these questions before I share the data. But, for example, K-2 students respond to questions like, I like the way the teacher treats me. I'm upset. If I'm upset, the teacher helps me feel better. The teacher is nice to me when I ask questions. Grades 3-5 respond to questions like, I like the way the teacher treats me. The teacher in the classroom really cares about me. The teacher is nice to me when I ask questions, right? And students, secondary students in 6-12 respond to questions like, the teacher seems to believe in my ability. The teacher in this class knows me very well. The teacher respects my ideas and suggestions. And I'm recognizing you're probably seeing themes to other conversations that you've had around this notion of relationship, teacher's belief in student, regardless of all of the different things that have been layered on top of the humanity, right? So in this country, there have been a number of things layered on top of our humanity, race being one of them, that leads to implicit bias. So we're really trying to get at what are the students' perceptions. And what our students are suggesting is that grades K-2, 87% of those students responded favorably. So yes, or yes always, or mostly yes. Grades 3-5, 91% of those students responded yes always or mostly yes. And at the secondary level, 6-12, 75% of those students responded yes always or mostly yes. So while none of those were 100%, recognizing that we still have work to do. I also just want to share a little bit about the fact that we really look at this work through a coherence framework, right? So we really focus our direction in St. Louis Park. We focus on cultivating collaborative communities. I mentioned earlier about the Park Association of Teachers. I've worked in several different school districts, and this is a very unique and special place where we have such a strong relationship with the Park Association of Teachers and such a aligned focus on what is required to impact student achievement at all levels. We're securing accountability, as I talked about, leading and lagging indicators. Certainly, we have a tremendous amount of work to do as it relates to our MCA scores, but we're seeing, and I look at that as more of a lagging indicator, but from a leading indicator, we're seeing some great improvement, and always deepening our learning, both personally and professionally. And I say personally because in St. Louis Park, what we suggest is that you can't do the work of racial equity just at work, right, and then go home and live in an unconscious way, so that we truly take this work from a personal and professional standpoint. In closing, I provided you some slides, and I didn't want to just bore you death by PowerPoint. I've also provided you a video that I would strongly encourage you to look at on your own time, which talks more about the racial equity coaching model that we instructional culture model that we have in St. Louis Park. And I thank you for your time and recognize that the work that we're doing is not necessarily unique, but I do believe that it is focused, and that it is truly having impact on our students. It's having impact on my own son's life as a kindergartner in our district. So I thank you for your time, and am willing to take your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Osei. I think Representative Scott, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you for being here today. And I have some information before me. Well, first of all, how long have you been implementing this piece that you handed out today?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Osei.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, so it has been a progression. I would say for the past 7 years, we started off with two teachers at our high school. And we started off with a blended model. We had part of our, way we were using our ATPPS dollars were focused on racial equity coaching, so teachers could opt in. So we started off with two, evolved, and that was 7 years ago, evolved to four teachers, and now we currently have 9 racial equity instructional coaches, some of which are paid for with the ATPPS dollars, and then we also use some of our general fund dollars to support the other half of the teachers.
Representative Scott,
thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. I On looking at the report card on the Minnesota Department of Education, from the statistics that I have, your math and reading scores have dropped since 2016, and graduation rates have also declined since 2015. And so while this may be, you know, good to implement and stuff, my main concern is that these kids are achieving and that we're closing that opportunity gap. And in 2018, it looks like here, the math proficiency rates for non-Hispanic whites, 73.9, black, 28.7, and Hispanic, 33.8. And the reading proficiencies for non-Hispanic whites, 76.7, black, 28.6, and Hispanic, 44.5. And so these gaps aren't closing. And so that's, again, my primary concern is that we're educating these kids and we're closing that gap. And so what are you doing on that front?
Yeah, so
Superintendent Osei?
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, thank you for your question. And something that I didn't talk about is that last year 70% of our 11th graders opted out of the MCA math test, which is not necessarily reflected. I know that the state has recently made some changes in how they respond, how test scores are responded to opting out. And what I would offer is that in St. Louis Park, in regionally in that area, there is a belief that the current Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment is not necessarily actively or effectively measuring how students are doing in school on a daily basis. So in our community, many parents have chosen not to use that as a way to measure their students' academic achievement and have chosen to opt out. So I would say as you look at some of that data and as we kind of go back and historically look at how families have been engaging in the use of that Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, you may see some correlation between declining scores and participation in the exam.
Representative Scott, one more follow-up, and I think we have some other people that have some questions.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence. So, you know, that may be the 11th grade, you know, they're opting out to take the ACT or whatever. So can you provide us with the numbers from the ACT, these same, rates for the non-Hispanic whites, black and Hispanic? Do you have that information?
I don't have that with me segregated by race right now. And in reading, over 40% of our 10th graders opted out as well. So, and if I can provide the committee with historical trend data, if you would like that as well.
Yeah, and I just like to know how you are measuring. If you're not, you know, using that, there's got to be some way of measuring student achievement. So I'd be interested in that. Thank you,
Superintendent. Representative Christensen, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just put my two cents in here, and I do know as a teacher that it's becoming more and more and more common that many folks are opting out of the MCA testing series. So it is affecting some numbers, and I think that's probably something that we need to look at. But I know in my school district in Stillwater, it's that percentage is rising every year of the folks that are opting out of the testing.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. And that reminds me, tomorrow, if we are in session, we're getting notice that the Senate might be closing tomorrow, so we're waiting to see if we are. But, you know, we're special here. We are going to be talking about standardized testing. I actually, I've heard some really good numbers, Superintendent. I'm sorry I didn't ask him to come with a deep dive into the numbers or the dashboard. Clearly, when some folks have some information that aren't in the rest of our packets. But I did hear some wonderful numbers starting to come out of your elementary schools that you're seeing. And I know you haven't had time to unpack it, but I've talked to some pretty excited people, especially at Aquila where I was working, that you're seeing some great numbers with some of your students. Maybe you want to touch on those.
Yeah, and again, I don't, Madam Chair, I don't have the numbers in front of me, and those aren't numbers that are reflective of the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment. We use, just as many other districts use, data that or assessments that provide more formative data, not the autopsy data that the MCA often provides, but the measures of academic performance, the MAP test, we use that, and we really look at that from a growth standpoint because if you have students that are starting, 3-4 grade levels behind, as we wait to the end of the year and we look at how they do academically on MCA, they may not always reach proficiency, but it's our expectation that we're growing students, you know, at rapid rates. So the data that you're referring to is data that shows student growth, which I would argue is a much more valuable measurement than proficiency data, especially if we're looking at students that are starting not at grade level. But I'm sorry, Madam Chair, that I don't have that specific.
No, that's okay, Superintendent. We're going to be talking a lot more about standardized testing. I agree, growth models look a lot, you know, really help teachers and students figure out where they're at. Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, you actually asked the question I was going to ask. I'm really, you know, which has to do with, you know, other positive data that the district is looking at. I'm really struck by in the slide because, you know, the whole way QCAP works is that it doesn't happen unless the local, the teachers themselves are embracing it. And so it's one of those policy areas where we haven't been directive. We said, look, here's an opportunity, here's some resources, but you all have to get together and agree to do it. And so you've got the administration, you know, and the school, the instructional staff, the teachers, agreeing to do it. And so I'm just really struck by St. Louis Park, where the educators themselves, the teachers, rather, the classroom teachers, are the ones that apparently stood up and said, you know, as folks are interacting with, and you know, the responsibility to provide opportunity for students in our classroom, we think it's important for us to attain the wills and the skills and capacity to be able to address race as we interact and drive with students and drive academic achievement. So I guess maybe the question beyond MCA quantitative data is perhaps you could share with us quickly what, you know, Superintendent, what, if anything, that's done in terms of creating the kind of environment, maybe it has, maybe it hasn't, but creating the kind of environment in your schools where there's a dynamism around learning and teaching as a result of teachers stepping up and saying they want to be able to attain these kinds of skills and experiences and awareness.
Superintendent, I'll have you let you have the last word on this, and then we're going to move to St. Cloud Schools because they've driven down a little bit of ways. So, Superintendent, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, We've seen, as I referenced before, in the classroom on a daily basis, you know, not only the relationship between student and teacher has improved, we've also seen an increased elevation of student voice. You know, I remember as a student, school was done to me almost, right? I came and the adults really drove what my experience was like. And what we're seeing in St. Louis Park is that certainly the adults are still guiding the situation, I mean, the experience, but student voice is being elevated to the point where students are influencing their learning. They're being given the opportunity with more voice and choice in what they learn connected to the standards. And it's been meaningful from a standpoint of relevance, where students are able to truly learn about things that are meaningful to them racially, culturally, and it's improved their level of engagement and desire to be in our school buildings.
Thank you, Superintendent, and thank you for the information. And we're going to call down the St. Cloud Schools to hear about the work they've been doing. And I know we're running a few minutes late, but we'll give you just under 10 minutes to present and some time for questions, and then we'll wrap it up. And why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record and your title as Maris is setting up the slideshow.
Good afternoon. My name is Marcia Beisch, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent for St. Cloud Area Schools.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Sylvia Huff, and I am the Director of Research, Evaluation, and Assessment for the St. Cloud Area School District.
Thank you. Go ahead with your presentation.
So first, we want to let you all know about who we are as the St. Cloud Area School District. We're located in the Central Minnesota region, and historically, our district has always consisted primarily of white students. As you can see in the graph on the left of the screen, around the 2009-10 school year, so almost a decade ago, over 74% of the students in our district were white. Fast forward to the current school year, where the majority of our students are now students of color. So although we're located in the central Minnesota region, our district is actually becoming more and more representative of the urban districts in our state. Also, while discussing the local demographics of our district, one highlight is the population of our English learners in the school district. You can see that compared to the 2009-10 school year, so again, almost a decade ago, where only about 10% of our students were English language learners, we are now almost a quarter of that. So in the 2018-19 school year, almost 25% of our students are English language learners. And within our district, there are over 30 languages represented, with the top three being Somali, Spanish, and Vietnamese. So given these changes, our district, of course, prioritizes racial equity and work around that, and we are proactively working to make sure that we are addressing and tackling all opportunity gaps.
As Dr. Huff indicated, with our changing demographics over the last decade, what we've intentionally done is first and foremost work with the leadership in our district. And we've done that in several ways. Improving instructional leadership, we believe, leads to improved student achievement. Researchers Lewis, Wallstrom, Leithwood, and Anderson from the University of Minnesota state that to date, they have not found a single case of a school improving its student achievement record in the absence of talented leadership. I'm going to share with you some of the ways that we've worked to improve and develop the instructional leadership skills of our building leaders. We began with The Better Way. That was a series of trainings aimed at helping adults understand the importance of making adaptive changes, reforming beliefs and behaviors around student discipline. Rather than focusing on what to do to disruptive students, adults learned and must now focus on what to do with and for them. A better way is driven by evidence-based social-emotional learning and not the urge to punish. We believe that keeping students in school is far more effective than sending them home, because when we do send them home, they, of course, miss out on instruction. This year, we are continuing this work, having been identified by the Minnesota Department of Human Rights as having disparate data and suspension rates between students of color and students with disabilities. Before our principals assign a suspension, an out-of-school suspension, to a student, they must check in with their accountability partner before doing so. As you can see some data in front of you, community accountability and prevention, or CAP as we refer to it, is an in-school suspension program that we've been using. As you can see, last year compared to this year, we see increases to CAP, so increases to referrals for in-school suspension, and decreases by almost half to out-of-school suspension. So we're working, as I indicated, to keep students in school and still hold them accountable for their missed choices. Some of the other things that we've done to develop our leaders is engage them in professional learning entitled Beyond Diversity. This was a two-day training aimed at helping leaders understand the impact of race on student learning and investigating the role that racism plays in institutionalizing academic achievement disparities. We then engaged in a two-year journey with in an institute called Courageous Institute through the Minnesota State University of Mankato. This institute is committed to continuous development of principals to lead with fearlessness, skill, self-knowledge, and racial competence so that under their leadership, every child fully achieves. In year one, leaders worked on knowing who they were as a leader. They worked on their will and skill to develop others, using data effectively to guide instruction and leadership, how to facilitate and sustain meaningful change, the will and the way to navigate politics without compromising achievement, becoming a strong racially conscious leader, and intentionally employing strategies that get results for all students. In year two, they went deeper into those concepts and focused on a data-driven project that was specific for their site.
Next, we engaged in culturally and linguistically responsive teaching, training or learning. And this is really looking at best practices and evidence-based teaching strategies to provide practical activities and information to support the modern-day teacher in successfully meeting the needs of all learners and understanding and appreciating the culture that each student brings with them to the classroom. There's a big focus on building relationships and knowing, really knowing who your students are. Another opportunity that our building leaders engaged in was a session or a full-day session with Dr. Anthony Mohammed on skill and will. Leaders explored the root causes of staff resistance to change and learned strategies for improving school culture and climate. And this year, we are working with the National Urban Alliance. We are not only including our building leaders, but all district leaders and those who support buildings as well. National Urban Alliance helps districts provide school leaders and teachers with the opportunity, guidance, and voice to identify what practices that they need that will help them build on student strengths and engage them in learning essential skills, content, and strategies to help all students be successful. Our building leaders are also engaging in personalized learning in order to build a culture of innovation in their school buildings. They are embarking on a monthly on their own development as innovative leaders. Each leader is part of a cohort engaged in a course of their choice that follows the ISTE standards for educators. And what they do is they come and learn monthly, and then the intent is that they will then go back to their building and do that with their teachers. So it's personalized learning, it's implement, and then it's reflection. One thing that we did intentionally at our buildings, so moving from theory to application, was school reviews. District 742 commissioned a third-party needs analysis of the quality and standards in our Title I schools in order to determine what was working well, what improvements were required, and what actions needed to be taken to ensure that quality and standards improved as quickly as possible. The reviews lasted 2 full days. And at the end of those reviews, schools received a written report, and schools then followed up with their own one-day planning session. Schools review those plans annually and make changes necessary each year. As a result of that, schools all have their own school improvement plans. School improvement is the single most important business of the school, in that it is a continuous improvement process to ensure that all students are provided access, opportunity, and support to achieve at high levels. The school improvement plan identifies in that schools have to identify an academic, math, and reading goal, an equity goal, a graduation rate goal, and a behavior goal to ensure that every student graduates. Also, schools prepare and develop what's called a target page. A target page is a one-page document and is often referred to as the mini school improvement plan. Components in the target page include mindful lesson planning, powerful instruction, ongoing analysis of assessments and data, and creating professional learning opportunities for the staff. One thing that we were intentional about is creating school leadership teams. We did this in collaboration with our teachers union. This is a paid position in buildings for which teachers had to apply. The team is comprised of administrators, classroom teachers, and other support staff. The team meets twice a month and is responsible for leading the learning and teaching and the professional learning of their building. Out of the school reviews came a model called co-teaching. We have co-teaching in all of our buildings, elementary through high school. Co-teaching utilizes 2 certified teachers in the classroom. Students are clustered in classrooms, and it's an integrated service model using the lens and expertise of special education teachers, English language learner teachers, and the general education teacher. The 2 teachers together plan, direct the instruction, and support the learning of the students in the classroom.
One example of the success that we're witnessing from the co-teaching efforts, along with a number of other initiatives taking place in our district, is the improvement in the mathematic performance of our English language learners, and particularly shown here is the data from Discovery Elementary. And we selected Discovery Elementary because this particular elementary is one of our most diverse elementary schools in our district. And so the red line in the graph is the statewide trend for mathematics MCA performance of EL students, whereas the blue line is the performance of our students, EL students at Discovery. And the main highlight here is just that as the overall trend for English language learners and math across the state has been steadily decreasing over the past few years, at Discovery, again, one of our most diverse elementary schools and a school that has fully implemented the co-teaching model, we're seeing a steady increase in the performance for math for our English language learners. In addition to using co-teaching as a method to really focus and target on the instruction for all students, but in particular our English language learners and SPED students, we conducted an internal as well as an external audit of the English language services and programs within our district. As a result of those particular audits, we found a number of different elements in which we could focus on. And that included incorporating additional changes in terms of our programming for these students, looking at the classes and curriculum, as well as finding age-appropriate materials, for example, for high school students that was at their reading level. And so as we continue to implement these changes, we're starting to see results as our English language learners exit out of the English language program. So as you can see represented in the graph where our MCA reading performance is compared and is relative to their EL status, when our students are in the EL program, so the current EL bars, the majority of those students are in the red on the MCA. So red indicates the does not meet category of MCA scores. However, once our students are proficient in English and are exiting the English language program, so our students in the former EL category, we're seeing performance that is similar to our students who are not EL. And that's represented by the green and blue bars. So green indicating student scoring in the meets category and blue indicating the scores in the exceeds category. So you can see that the green and blue proportion for our former EL students is very similar to our students who are not EL for reading performance. Another program that we are very proud of within the St. Cloud District is the Young Scholars Program. And the Young Scholars Program falls within our talent development department. However, unlike most traditional gifted and talented programs, students identified for Young Scholars are not identified on the basis of exceptional achievement or ability scores. Instead, students are identified by a very specific set of equitable look-fors. So, and teachers and staff within the buildings are trained on different criteria to look for students who have high potential and that show signs of high potential. So problem-solving abilities, critical thinking, students who have the potential that just needs to be fostered to really get them to those higher scores. And by providing that set of training and those specific look-fors for the teachers, we are then able to identify students who wouldn't necessarily see themselves as scholars. And that's the overall purpose of the Young Scholars Program. It's really an early intervention to identify these students, to work with them not only in terms of strengthening those critical thinking skills and improving their scores, but also doing more social-emotional learning type of work with them so that they also see themselves as academics, as scholars. So once they leave elementary school, they're more likely to opt into honors classes in middle school and AP classes in high school when they may have otherwise not done so. And so far, as a result of our Young Scholars Program, we found that just based on last year's MCA scores alone, 33% of these students increased the proficiency level on the reading MCA. And again, these students are not identified for this program based on their MCA scores. So the majority of these students would be in the yellow, partially proficient. So we're seeing that those students are moving from partially proficient to proficient. The students who were inproficient are moving from proficient to exceeds. And even though this is just a third, this isn't including the students who maintain their proficiency level. So we're really seeing students move up as well as maintaining where they are. Also, when we're talking about just overall performance on the reading MCAs, about 59% of our Young Scholars were observed to be proficient in reading, and this is about 11 percentage points higher than the overall proficiency rate in reading for the elementary students within our district. When we're looking at the local assessment data used, which we use the STAR assessments in our district, 68% of our young scholars were observed to be growing as much or more than their national peers. So again, we're focusing on identifying students early based on these high potential qualities and then fostering that potential. And for our, for our young scholars who are now in middle school and have exited from the Young Scholars Program, we are seeing them being placed in honors courses in middle school. And as of this year, of those students in those programs, the majority have at least a B or higher in their honors classes. And so, again, the purpose of Young Scholars is to do the early intervention because we want to see students in honors and AP. And so we've also been extremely intentional about increasing access to AP courses and making sure that students of color see themselves as capable of taking on these challenging courses and then being successful within them. And so when we look at the change in participation of students of color in our AP courses, you can see that in terms of the number of students taking AP exams, since the 2015-16 school year, for our black student population, it increased from 29 to 50, and for our Hispanic Latino students, it has increased from 16 to 36. Obviously, these are not huge jumps, and when we're talking about the opportunity gap, it's still extremely discrepant when compared to their white counterparts, but we are making gains, and we're being very intentional about the way that we're going about it. Another programming effort that we wanted to highlight in our efforts to tackle the opportunity gap consists of our one-to-one devices at middle and high school. And we're aware that a number of districts within the state of Minnesota provide this opportunity. And so in our district at the middle school, our students are all issued a tablet, and at the high schools, the students receive laptops. However, within our district, we also want to make sure that students have access even when they go home, because we know that a very large percentage of our students receive free or reduced price lunch, and they have these devices, and we want them to be able to be connected and to complete assignments, but when they go home, they may not have access to Wi-Fi. And so within our district, we have hotspots available at all of our secondary buildings that can be checked out. These hotspots can then be taken home with students so that they can have full connectivity when they are at home, and they can only be accessed by district-issued devices, which means that other devices at home cannot be logged onto them. They're solely for the purpose of keeping our students connected and having access outside of the school walls. So we've talked about leadership, and we've also talked about programming, and now we want to wrap up by discussing the ways that our district is tackling the opportunity gap by amplifying parent and student voice. Listed here are just a few of the ways that we are attempting to address this. With the community cafes, these are really opportunities that happen twice a year. So we typically have a fall and then spring cafe, and we have them on the north side, south side of town that allow our families and community partners to come together and have targeted conversations on specific topics. So at each table, there's a facilitator or a table leader, and individuals are really able to just make those connections, see what resources are available in the community, and also just have their voice heard. If they have questions, concerns, that is an opportunity for them to bring forward. Parents in Action is a program that is developed and sponsored out of the equity department within our district. And with Parents in Action, it is an opportunity for parents to go through their own course. Really, the parents are the students, and they're learning how to help their students navigate their educational career. At the end of the Parents in Action program, there's a graduation, and the parents are always very excited because they're being celebrated. And it's just teaching them things that they might not know in terms of educational opportunities and how to be good advocates for their children. And then finally, in terms of the amplifying student voice events, at our high schools, we've had opportunities for students to lead their teachers and staff in professional development. So these are opportunities for students to make sure that their teachers and instructors know who they are and what they need in order to be successful. And so they do videos telling them who they are, but then they're also taking their staff members through professional development. And we would love to take your questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Huff and Assistant Superintendent Baish, for coming all the way down here to share some of the great successes you're having in St. Cloud Schools. I think I have a question from Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, Thank you, Superintendent, for coming all the way here. I know it's brutally cold outside. And thank you for the wonderful presentation. For me, when I think about St. Cloud School District, I think about tension, racial profiling of Somali students, cultural insensitivity, disrespect to many things. And I remember that there was a MDA intervention. So can you guys speak on what has been done about the bullying and the racial profiling of Somali students, and has that improved, or what's the status of that? Thank you.
Madam Chair. And
Representative Hassan.
Representative. Thank you for that question. We have worked very intentionally to break those barriers and to ensure that we're creating a culture of belonging, safety, a welcoming culture. It's part of what our mission says who we are. And as a result of some of those, we have been very intentional about creating, as Dr. Huff alluded to, opportunities for students to have voices. And we have equity teams in our middle schools and high schools. And students have opportunities within those teams to, you know, to talk about what's happening within each of their buildings and how as a school and as a student body they can respond to that. In addition to that, we're very intentional about how we deal with issues of harassment and bullying. We use practices like conflict mediation, restorative practices, so that we are addressing those. We're not shying away from any of what students are dealing with, because we do want to create a culture where all feel like they belong and are safe and so that they can learn.
Follow up?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Superintendent, so what I'm speaking of is not only students misbehaving. I'm speaking of, you know, adults, you know, witnessing and watching students being bullied. And there are videos of it. Like, this isn't even something that I, you know, is private. It was the people recorded. Teachers are over there watching, and Somali students are eating food, and there's two white male students walking on the table as students are eating and just, you know, dumping the food on them. And the principal saw that video. There were teachers that were witnessing. So it's not only student problem that I'm talking about, it's adult problem that I'm talking about. So what are some of the things that St. Cloud is doing, school district's doing, to address those issues, the teachers, the adults in the buildings, the administration? What are some, you know, progressive ideas that you guys have done? Like, just give me some ideas. I'm trying, because this is a wonderful presentation, and I want to walk away with thinking positive of St. Cloud Public Schools. And right now, I'm not there. So just give me some ideas of what you have done. Thank you.
Sure, and I'll ask Dr. Huff to chime in as well. Madam Chair, Representative, you know, you're right. It is not just about the students, but it is about the adults as well. And so we're working very hard to change the mindset and the culture and the climate that exists within of our buildings. It starts with having conversations about implicit bias, racism, and how each of our, you know, that's why we've worked so hard to focus on our leaders, so that they feel equipped to go into their buildings and work with staff and feel equipped to work with when students issues arise, to be able to deal with those head on and address them. And like I said, not shy away from them, not sweep it under the rug, but ensure that we're holding not only students accountable, but adults. And part of that comes with the training that we've done and are doing with our staff. We're using a protocol called Courageous Conversations, and staff leaders in our building monthly work with staff around issues of implicit bias and bring up scenarios such as what you're just talking about, and saying how do we deal with these so that our students are not feeling isolated and ostracized or oppressed in any way.
Would you have something to add, and then we have one other question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hassan. I would also say that the Department of Research and Assessment, in combination with the Department of Equity Services, conducts focus groups with students as well as parents and staff. And during these student focus groups, they're typically designed as affinity groups. So we'll bring students of color together. We'll have some focus groups with just our white students where they can really get all of their concerns out in a safe space following a specific protocol. That information is then compiled, analyzed, and provided to the building administrators at those particular sites. And the building administrators are then able to use that and create their own action plans with their administrative team, with their leadership team at the school, and of course, in conjunction with the district administrators as well.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Mariani,
last word.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Representative Hassan, for your observations and questions. I think it's very possible to have a couple of things happening at the same time. And that, to me, just speaks about how difficult it is to change systemic behavior and change culture. So, you know, folks who are trying to do that are still dealing with others within their community that are stuck somewhere else. And so I'm real pleased to hear that there's a scientific approach, it sounds like, that's being used here. But I think this really speaks to what Superintendent Asse spoke about earlier, which was basically that there is a connect between the kind of skills to be able to disrupt and end that kind of behavior and get us to what education needs to be about. And that's just not going to happen by itself. It's going to happen by intentional, you know, commitment and scientific approaches to looking at ourselves and our systems, and it sounds like that's certainly what the educators in St. Louis Park are doing, and it sounds like what you're also wrestling with. I just want to lift up a couple of things, you know, quickly, that there are a couple issues or principles of equity that you articulated. I just wanted to reemphasize them. You know, when you talk about the co-teaching model for EL students, I prefer to use EML, emerging multilinguals, because I think that's really, you know, what we want to produce from our citizenry. But the use of the co-teaching model, for me, really reflects an equity principle, which is you do specifically what works for a specific student group. So it's really about tailoring and adjusting our pedagogy so that they reflect who's in front of us, as opposed to one box, you know, one size fits all. So I want to applaud that. I also am really impressed by another principle, which is rigor, the use of rigor. You know, so that's what the AP thing is all about. You know, Minneapolis several years ago, they took a number of their EL students, and I forget the categories, but it was the category where it's like they're really having a hard time at this point with English, and put them through AP courses and exams, and guess what? They did really well there. You know, the issue was, now they tested out in their language. The issue there was that they're not incapable. They just right now don't speak English, you know. And so to distort, you know, language with cognitive ability, that's a big mistake, you know. And so it's about expecting higher, and that's what they did. That's what you guys are doing. So I'm not surprised to see. I am impressed by the jump in participation, and I suspect that that'll continue to grow. Obviously, you know, the parent community involvement, it really is going to take all hands on deck. And I would suspect that the parents and community members in the Somali community in your area need to be at the table in order to work with you to design the appropriate interventions and the new pedagogical approaches. So I want to thank you for sharing that with us today, and I wish you continued luck and keep pushing yourself because there certainly are challenges that need to be addressed.
Thank you. One last question, Representative Erickson, then we'll wrap up. Members have been really patient. We're a little over time right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the report card on the MDE website that shows your students do strongly agree that teachers care about them. So I think you need to be certainly saluted for that. I don't know if that's been a change or if that's been ongoing in St. Cloud, but I think you're doing some really good work there to help teachers and students work together, and they're appreciating it and understanding it, so good for you. But, Madam Chair, I did want to point out that St. Louis Park did not indicate on the website their student engagement chart, so I'm hoping that the superintendent will pay attention. You have no student engagement on your MDE report card, so I hope that that will appear soon. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just say one more thing to Representative Pisan. Sometimes when you have to talk on the spot, you forget about things. But we have in each of our buildings Somali parent groups and who have really been partners with us in helping us create cultures that are we're all students are learning and feeling successful. And in addition, we work really closely with the Somali elders in our community.
Thank you, Assistant Superintendent, and thank you for all the groups coming down today. What I was hoping to highlight with this informational hearing was that there's no really magic bullet to attacking the opportunity gap, and our districts across the state are doing a lot of good work and trying to figure out how to best do that, and wanted to throw out some ideas so people could see that. So thank you for helping us highlight that. And it looks like so far we are open for tomorrow. So we will be hearing, we will be having our hearing on meeting with the commissioner of MDE, a presentation on the standardized student testing, the recommendations from the Future Assessment Design Working Group. And then we'll be having Representative Bennett's House File 125. So everybody dress warmly and travel safely tomorrow. We're adjourned.
Thank you.